Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tennis with an Accent. This is Saqib Ali hosting the show. It's Roland Garros 2020. And yes, it's end of September and not your typical year. But we're lucky to have some tennis back. And this looks like your unusual tournament with the lights in Roland Garros, night matches. And now they've introduced a heavier ball, which players are already having a lot of, you know, a lot of critiques about that ball. And helping me unpack and this draw and this show are two of the better known voices on tennis Twitter, Mert Ertunga, one of our Tennis with an Accent analysts, is back on the show, and Damien Kous is making his second appearance on Tennis with an Accent. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, Saqib. Hi, Damien.
Hello. Hi, great to be back here.
So again, no introductions, but before I jump into my agenda or the questions I have, Damien, you want to talk to the audience here? I'm sure everybody enjoyed your last visit. So what have you been up to? I know you write a lot about tennis. You're a freelance writer. So just to give an introduction for someone who missed that first episode when you were back here.
Yeah, I'm mostly associated with the Last Word on Tennis website. But yeah, as you said, I'm a freelancer. During the pandemic, I had a bit of a break, but I'm coming back now and, you know, taking a full flight.
Sure. Yeah, welcome. And I'm sure, you know, I'm looking forward to your views because, you know, your knowledge for, you know, all sorts of players, not just the top players, but overall players bleeding into the lower 200s is quite impeccable. And I'm sure you'll help both me and Mert in that regard of some of the newer names. And Mert really doesn't need any introduction. So let's get into the meat of the section here. Mert, you can go first. Not to repeat myself, not your normal switch, US Open to Rome, Rome to Paris. I know you've played professionally. How big is this a deal for all the players to have surfaces readjusted and then, more importantly, to play the Clay Slam close to end of September?
Well, I never played at this level, of course, but at the lower levels, players do play at different surfaces and close to, in the fall or even close to the fall, even after playing on grass or on hard courts throughout the summer or early in the spring. So many of these players should not, that particular aspect should not matter that much. It will matter to the players who have in the past focused on bigger tournaments, ATP events, ATP 1000s or the majors. You know, for them, it's a reversal of schedule. Having French Open this late after the US Open is, of course, a really odd situation. But then again, the whole year has been odd, so they might be used to the concept of facing the odd. This all remains to be seen. Again, you know, I know I've used this expression before, but we're swimming in a pool of unknowns. The only small detail that brings Roland Garros a step closer to normalcy is the fact that there were qualifying rounds, something that we did not have at the U.S. Open. So there will be some players who've actually been, in the French Open bubble, so to speak, who will move on to the main draw and play first round main draw against some players who may have just arrived 3 or 4 days ago. And maybe even playing their first match, their first official match on clay this year. So those few matches may be interesting to look at, but other than that, it's still a super odd year.
Sure. So Damien, you know, if you want to elaborate on the addition or the introduction of the new Wilson balls, and there's a lot of talk in tennis Twitter, what have you come across? I'm sure Nadal's spoken about it. So for the listeners here on the show, give your views. How do those balls add to the already slower surface and the conditions, because it's almost fall and there'll be night tennis first time in French Open?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of quotes were released today from Nadal's press conference because today was the media day at the Roland Garros. And, you know, Nadal spoke that these conditions do not really suit his game. He said that because of the weather, because of the fall, the impact of the heavier, slower Wilson balls is just even bigger. Honestly, we can't really tell much about it until we see some play on the Philippe Chatrier court, or until we see Djokovic or Nadal play with them. The qualifying tournament didn't look that much different, to be honest, but you know, it's not that easy to judge these things from, you know, just looking at the TV screen. So we're gonna have to wait for the big guys to show up, for everyone to, you know, I'm sure at the press conferences after the matches, that's gonna be one of the biggest topics in the first two or three rounds. So we're definitely gonna get a lot of content, a lot of quotes about it from the players.
Yeah, well said. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, I guess. So you're right. When the top names take the press conference, and then I think everyone will have to say how the ball and the surface is matching up. So, Mert, when Matt was reviewing the U.S. Open again, like you said, it's slightly better. So is there, again, you don't believe in asterisks. Is there any asterisks for this French Open before we start this show? Because of when it's held and all the probabilities that come along due to the pandemic?
No, none. We've had majors before that moved to a different time of the year. We've had majors before that changed surfaces, and we never put an asterisk on those. So why put an asterisk on this one? No, not at all.
Okay. Damien, do you have a say on that? Do you believe in asterisk?
I definitely agree. I didn't put an asterisk on the US Open, and I think here it would be just even less wise. So let's just, you know, this watch it and feel, you know, feel relieved that we have a third Grand Slam this year, and you know, not get all conspiracy theories about this.
Sure. All right, so Damien, I'm going to stay with you. Let's look at Novak Djokovic's dogs, who's living right at the top as a top seed, and he's playing some really good tennis. Won Rome after the default in New York. How does a slow clay help his game, and does anyone in his 16, you know, when you look at it, Hubi Hurkacz, you know, your countryman, is his third round opponent, but potential. If seeds hold to form. If you look at his section from 1 to Hubi, does anyone stand out who can trouble Nole?
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Rome title, I mean, he wasn't really, you know, playing perfect tennis there. His performances, especially against Ruud or Dominic Kepfer, were, you know, filled with errors, but he still managed to come through that, which is, you know, obviously a great skill of him, that he can win while not playing his best. He's been doing that all year, still hasn't lost a completed match. And as many have pointed out, that his draw, his section is actually pretty weak. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, Christian Garin is maybe one of the guys that I could see upsetting him, possibly if he has a, you know, an off day. But Garin is still in playing the semifinals tomorrow in Hamburg, so you know, it can work both ways. He can be both tired of that or you know, get a lot of confidence from that run. But you mentioned Hurkacz. I mean, they played each other at Roland Garros last year, and in the first round actually, and it was a very straightforward win. I think everyone is just expecting Djokovic to pass these first four tests, and I'm not sure there's anyone who can do it, especially in best of five. If it was best of three, there would always be, you know, a slight chance, but in best of five, the differences between the players, the luck is even, you know, you can't just redline your game for a set and then somehow force Djokovic to feel the pressure. It's going to be even harder to do it. I think he's got a great section and probably going to steamroll through the first week.
Sure. So, Mark, let me bring you into this section. I think if you disagree with Damien, you can, you know, flag anything that he said. But if there's an agreement, I would like you to talk about Karen Khachanov, who's really hasn't had an impressive return to court after the COVID break. And is there anyone in this section that stands a potential challenger to Novak?
No, I actually agree with everything that Damien said, and he explained it very well. He also mentioned about Garin, which I agree with him also. But again, you know, just like he said, Garin has to play so many matches this week. And he's going to have to play so many matches next week just to even get to Djokovic. And three or four of them, will have to be best out of five. I mean, he's going to play Cole Schreiber first round in Roland Garros. I can't even say for sure that he'd get past Cole Schreiber. And, you know, a seasoned five-set veteran who's played many French Opens before. But in that little section that they are, there's also Khachanov, like you mentioned, and Khachanov would have to play three or four matches in a row of his life to even challenge Djokovic. He's a powerful hitter, which is an advantage. You know, he can finish points off with his first serve or with his forehand if he catches the ball high, not low, but high, and he can accelerate his backhand very, very well. So game wise, he has some goods that could give top players, including Djokovic, trouble. But has he shown that he can do that this year? No, he's not done well, this year leading up to Roland Garros. And again, you know, he has to make it there first. So,
yeah. No, exactly. His fans really, you know, looking at his performance, they're probably not exuding a lot of confidence in their men. But anything can happen. It's best of five. So looking slightly below or further into Djokovic's quarter, Roberto Bautista Agut starts against Richard Gasquet, and then there could be all Spanish third round between Karina Busta and Bautista Agut if they both win their first two matches. So, Mert, do you see that match as a reality, and does the winner of that match could be potentially a big challenge for Novak down the road?
Okay, the winner of which match, Bautista Agut, and who did you said? I'm sorry.
Karina Busta.
Yes, Karina Busta. Okay. Yeah, it could be. Yes, it could be a challenge. Yes, it will. It should not be a cakewalk by any means. But Djokovic will still go into that match as the clear favorite. I'm not so sure that Karina Busta will be in the will make it there. I don't know. There's Bautista Agut, who by the way has to play Gasquet. But I would think that he'd make it past Gasquet. But even the winner of Bautista Agut and Karina Busta, then would have to play someone like Berrettini. Perhaps, you know, there's a little really interesting section there, but let's say for a moment that Berrettini makes it there. I'm not even sure that, you know, Bautista Agut or Karina Busta can beat Berrettini to go on to play Djokovic. So that's a question mark section there. Personally, if I had to pick someone to actually make it as far as Djokovic and given the most trouble on a given day, I would go with Berrettini, who if he believes. If he believes, you know, if Berrettini actually believes that he can beat one of the elite players, which I'm not sure that he does, but if he believes that he's got the, he's got the capacity to shorten up points from the baseline with his big forehand, he's got a decent serve, and he can always go for the kill. I just don't think that any of those guys, Bautista Agut, Karina Busta, or Berrettini, have the game to topple Djokovic in a best out of five sets, even if they played the best tennis of the year. And that goes back to what Damian was saying earlier about five sets.
No, I think that's there's no disagreement there probably from both of us side. So Damian, when you look at this section from Berrettini all the way to Bautista Agut, I'll throw a different question. What are some of the most intriguing or mouth-watering matches that you see here that maybe someone who doesn't watch too much tennis can identify? So identify some good matches for us.
Definitely Bautista Agut Gasquet is a fantastic first round match. I mean, we haven't really seen a good level from Gasquet in a while, but he's always, you know, he's always exciting to watch simply because of how beautiful his game is. It would be great if this match could be played with a crowd, you know, with all the I think Gasquet is one of the more loved Frenchmen, so it would definitely be great if the roaring French crowd, but it's still going to be a treat. I mean, but as Mert said, I also don't expect Bautista Agut to struggle here that much. There's a potential, like, maybe not upset alert, but, you know, we shouldn't underestimate Vasek Pospisil. I think way too many people are treating it as, you know, that Berrettini should, you know, as treating it as a certainty that Berrettini will make it through that first round. And I don't think that should be the case. Pospisil has been playing some great tennis in the past 12 months since he came back from an injury break. Before we started recording, I also said something about Daniel Altmaier. I think he's one of the most interesting qualifiers, and that little part of that section there with Struff, Tiafoe and Altmaier Lopez can produce some great matches, I think. Also maybe, I mean, Lloyd Harris could be a very tricky opponent for Berrettini or especially in the second round, but he actually retired today in a Challenger Tour semi, so I'm not sure if he's going to be healthy for that.
So who will be your quarterfinal opponent if Mert is going with Berrettini? Who does Djokovic play in the quarterfinal if you just have to pick a name from here?
Yeah, just to be kind of different, I'm going to go for Bautista Agut, but I think it's very open here. It could be a couple of guys. I also absolutely agree with Mert on the fact that Bautista Agut probably doesn't have the game to beat Djokovic in a best of five. I mean, their matchup has been very hard for Djokovic recently. A lot of close games where he just also faded away mentally a bit, but he actually leads him like 5-0 on clay. I think on clay the flat backhand that Bautista Agut has doesn't really work that well. It doesn't have enough power. I think it just allows Djokovic to take advantage, to dominate the points.
Sure.
I agree with that. That's a good point. I mean, Bautista Agut's backhand is not going to be as effective on clay, as impactful on clay against Djokovic as it may be on hard courts. Damien talked about Pospisil, which I also thought about for a second. But then Damien, I looked at what Pospisil has done, you know, on clay over the last few years, and he's actually done quasi nothing. Like that's the only reason why I didn't mention him. I mean, there's no doubt he's been playing well, and he's shown, and there he has shown throughout his career that at certain times he can step it up and do very well, even in majors. I just don't think this is the place for it. But yeah, I mean, that's an intriguing first round for sure.
Sure. And talking about the flatness of shots of Bautista Agut, another player who has a lot of flat strokes is Daniil Medvedev. Now an elite player coming in as a fourth seed. I think that's upset alert with Martin Fucsovics. Mert, do you agree there in that match? Fucsovics, I think, won Geneva last year or the year before, week before French Open. Again, that's a long time ago, but how do you see that first round match?
No, that's actually one of the first round matches I have down as my top five, say, the most interesting match to watch. I am definitely going to try to catch that live when it comes on, even if it's in the middle of the night my time. I would like to get up and watch that. That to me, that's going to be a super interesting match. It's a good matchup in terms of game too, and. It's a little bit tricky because you tend to think, well, Medvedev has not won a match at Roland Garros before, so, and then he has to play a tricky match right here at first against an opponent who probably will go out to the court not really fearing his opponent that much. But at the same time, if I'm correct, I don't think Fucsovics beat Medvedev I don't know how many times they played, but I don't think he's ever beaten them.
Three times, and he lost all three.
He lost all three. Okay, and I think they played in Monte Carlo last year or the year before. Actually, I can't remember.
I actually just pulled that head to head up. So I'm not.
Yeah, but it was a close match. That. It was a close match.
Yeah. Like Medvedev. 7-5.
Okay, 7-5 in the third. There you go. So I do remember it being a close match, and Fucsovics, I think, in my opinion, is a bit better now, a better player than he was 2 years ago. Also. So yes, I mean, if Medvedev leaves this Roland Garros still winless in his Roland Garros career, to me it would not be a shocker. It would be a surprise, yes, but it would not be a shocker. And then later, Well, and anyway, I'll stop here because you asked about that first round.
No, but I think you can carry on that, and I'll add my thought. I think if you look at from Medvedev to Basilashvili, those eight players, I think Fucsovics might be the toughest opponent in there for Medvedev. That's what I think.
No, that's a tough opponent, definitely. The only thing is, there's also Thiago Monteiro, who's a very good player, but he's in a final also. He's in a challenger final, so he's going to come into the first week of Roland Garros, having played, four matches or five matches already, and then he has to go out and play three out of five set matches. I'm not sure if he's seasoned enough in a best out of five situation to overcome that. He's going to play Basilashvili first round. Let's say he gets the upset there, which would not be a surprise. Then he's got to play the winner of Halis and Giron. Okay. Even if he gets past that, then what's he going to have left in the tank, to play Medvedev or Fucsovics in the third round? So I like Monteiro actually in that section, but I don't like the fact that he's coming into this first week of French Open having played matches in a row already. So I'm going to go with the winner of Fucsovics and Medvedev all the way to the round of 16.
All right, so over to you, Damien. I mean, talk about Monteiro and talk about your potential winner of this section of eight players who advances to the round of 16 from these eight.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of Thiago Monteiro's clay court game for a while now. I always kind of didn't understand why he's not main tour regular. Some of his challenger performances are amazing. As Mert said, that upset over Basilashvili would be an upset just because Basilashvili is seeded. He hasn't done anything in a while. He also has these these personal issues. He's currently there's an ongoing trial in Georgia for domestic abuse on his wife, right? So I think his head is not in the right place right now. So Monteiro has a great chance to reach the third round, but I will agree again that he's playing great this week in Forlì, but he's gonna play tomorrow, then get this is the top half of the draw, so he's gonna have to play on Monday his first round. Then on Friday, if he was to reach the third round against Medvedev or even Fucsovics, who's this type of player that will take advantage if your legs are weary, if you're feeling exhausted, then I would also say that Medvedev or his first round opponent will be the ones taking the fourth round from here. But I am a bit more confident in Medvedev. I think the rumors of his weaker clay court game are maybe a bit over exaggerated. I mean, as we said about Bautista Agut, the flat shots, I also see there's Adrian Mannarino in that section. So, the players that have the most flat strokes do not really feel that well on clay. But I think Medvedev's just movement and defense is should probably be way too much for guys like Monteiro or Basilashvili if he was to make it. I don't consider Medvedev, a big favorite for the whole title, but I think he's definitely good enough to finally get that first win at Roland Garros.
Sure. All right, so let's look a little further into his section. His potential round of 16 could be good friend Andrei Rublev, who starts against Sam Querrey, but can also run into, I think, Dusan Lajovic, who had a good tournament in Hamburg, lost to Tsitsipas today. So, Mert, look at these eight and see who's going to be standing against Medvedev when Monday rolls around.
Yeah, Lajovic is the only guy that I personally see challenging Rublev. I think Rublev is going to make it through that section. And if he has to play anyone other than Medvedev, I'm favoring Rublev to go even to the quarterfinal. But if Medvedev does make it there to the fourth round, then I think it's a different story. I think Medvedev will have the confidence enough to. I mean, that in that case, that's a 50-50 match, or even just for the sake of mathematics, 51-49 in favor of Medvedev if they both make it that far. But if Rublev has to face anyone other than Medvedev, at that fourth round, I think he's gone to the quarterfinals.
Hmm. So, Damien, you can come in and look at these eight. Davidovich, Fokina, or anyone else to stand out here in this section of eight who can advance to round of 16 against Medvedev or even go beyond?
I fully agree with Mert. I mean, I've been on to Rublev for a while now. I mean, I've been praising him like every day, I think. It might be pretty irritating for some of my followers on Twitter. But I mean, I had some doubts about his clay court game. Like he got his first ATP title on clay in Umag. He was a runner-up in Hamburg, but his Italian Open campaign was not that good. He lost to Hubert Hurkacz in the second round. But I think he made me lose the doubts this week in Hamburg. He's been playing fantastic today against Roberto Bautista Agut. So also like a player who's like a wall from the baseline. And he's just constructed the points really well, which is very surprising. I think there's a lot more thought in his game now. I think that there were people who called him like a ball basher back 2 years ago. And I think there's definitely a lot more merit to his, you know, just constructing the points. There's more thinking in his game. And Lajovic could be dangerous just because he's also very solid. And if Rublev has a poor performance, then he could take that. If he was to take Medvedev in the fourth round, you know, their match at the US Open was actually pretty close. I mean, these are two tie breaks. Rublev really impressed me with how consistent he was. He could stay with Medvedev in a lot of baseline rallies, but I kind of don't see him going through Medvedev just for fitness reasons. Like, it's not like Rublev is not fit enough, he's not much fit, he's not ready for best of five play. But I think if he was to take on Medvedev, it would just be so many big rallies, and Rublev with his physicality just being pretty lean and small, I'm not sure if he would be able to survive over 4 hours, over 3.5 with Medvedev on a surface that is, you know, just really demanding physically.
Damien, if you don't mind me asking a question, because I was going to watch, yeah. I haven't watched today's matches yet, and I was going to watch, you know, Rublev and Bautista Agut on delay later this evening, because I was curious as to how Rublev played. Maybe you can save me the trouble there. When you said he was constructing the points, was Rublev constructing the points in terms of, for example, if he caught any balls inside the baseline, was he hitting them and coming in, or was he staying back and making the other run, or how was
rather
he doing there?
Rather staying back. I don't think he played that much at the net, but I saw some beautiful drop shots, for example. You know, just very impressively keeping Bautista good on the back foot. I think he some great short cross court forehands. I mean, I really think there's a lot more thinking now in his game. Maybe if you watch that match, you're gonna have that same feeling too. We'll see.
Okay, thank you.
No, I think I would just like to add one thing. Maybe slightly disagree. I think the match, with Damien there, the physicality part, because I think the match at US Open could have gone either way had Rublev won the first set, I think, which was a tiebreak, which was very close. So I also think the only factor here is if Rublev wins Hamburg and then the match against Medvedev, or even Lajovic, if they are like, you know, testing matches on the way, then I wonder how much he has in the tank. Because I think if he wins Hamburg, he's not doing himself any favors in terms of, you know, if he goes deep, I'm sure the mileage is gonna count for some point. But yeah, I think he's someone who's impressed, I think, everyone after like a couple of years when it looked like he was a lightweight in the heavyweight division. Now he's just really, he packs a punch on his ground, his movement, his point construction. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir. You guys know a lot more technical stuff than I do. But I think, yeah, his progress in the tournament and how deep he goes in Hamburg, I think, will have a correlation at some point. So if we look further, this is a pretty interesting section coming up. That's Denis Shapovalov's opening against Gilles Simon, and then we have Grigor Dimitrov in this. So, Mert, how do you see this group of eight, and who's the favorite? Who's the last man standing when the third round is done here?
Third round. Okay, so you're talking about that little section with Shapovalov and Dimitrov. Yes, yeah. that is an interesting section. I'm not sold on Shapovalov on clay yet. I know he's had by his clay standards up to this point, he's had a fantastic tournament in Rome. Went to the third round. I really, and I'm saying this as a big fan of how Shapovalov's game is developing. I'm really liking what I'm seeing from him. He's one of the two or three up and coming players to actually try to integrate an all court style into his A plan, while some other players, most other up and comers are choosing to just, get things done from the baseline only. And I think to reach that elite level, top three or four level, you need to have an all court game and you need to work on that. It's a slow process that comes over years. And Shapovalov has been doing that. So I'm really liking what I'm seeing from him. I'm just not sure. I'm just not ready to put him as someone who's a guarantee to reach fourth round or second week at the French Open yet. I'd like to see that first. And here's a good test. He's going to play Gilles Simon first round, who hasn't had a good year, but Simon at Roland Garros, 3 out of 5, seasoned veteran. That is a great first round test for Dennis. That's an opportunity for Dennis to show that I'm ready to do well here in Paris also. If he can make it past that, it's not like his second round is going to be too easy either. Steve Johnson, Carbes, Baena, that should be a rough second round too. But if he does make it to the third round, he would play Dimitrov probably. I'm not sure. I'll let Damien take that one. But I'm taking Dimitrov here to make fourth round. To play Tsitsipas. But that's I'm open to be convinced otherwise.
So Damien, your views on this?
Yeah, I mean, I was also very impressed with Shapovalov in Rome. He's that kind of player who we already jumped on the hype train and said he's gonna make a great run at the Grand Slam many times before, and most of the time it failed. But a lot of people credit these improvements in his game to Mikhail Bujne, since they teamed up last year, his results have really been very impressive. In Rome, he it wasn't actually a one-off. He had a Masters 1000 final semifinal on clay before in Madrid from 2 years back or 1 year 2 years back, I think. I liked what I saw there, especially in terms again of point construction, as also the way he defended. Like, he wasn't really trying to always go for the risky shot, but also just looping some balls back to get back into the rally. If he can do that again, it's really tempting for me to pick Shapovalov to go really far here. Like, maybe even beyond this section, maybe even beyond this quarterfinal. Especially is to me his section is not that dangerous. Like Gilles Simon, as Mert said, hasn't been doing well. Maybe he would have a better chance if the crowd was there. Maybe that would kind of help him. Dimitrov has had some really bad luck with the draws, but also just hasn't been doing well recently. It's not a certainty for me that Dimitrov will progress to the third round, but I don't think if he's playing just his regular tennis, then he definitely should make it. Based on the recent performances that we've seen of Shapovalov, I am really tempted to pick him, and I'm definitely picking him to make the fourth round here. But I also think there's a very big chance that he gets upset here. Just maybe not even that much because of the opponents, just because of how inconsistent his game can be. Even at the US Open, where everyone was praising him, I think he lost a set in each match that he won, right? So it could just easily become 2 and then 3 sets.
Yeah, I think I agree with you both. And there's definitely, one can see level of maturity in Shapovalov's game. And Simon could be the match, I think, what Sasha Zverev played here a couple years ago against Verdasco. But Shapovalov still, given all Simon's experience, has to lose that match because a lot is on his racket. The strides he's made, the maturity in his game, and of course, he's a great shot maker, can come to the net, play an all-court game. So yeah, I also, a little bit side with Damien, you know, it's pretty much his little section to lose, and I see him definitely keeping a spot for a round of 16 if he gets through Simon. That's where I think it can get tricky, but still tricky on Shapovalov's own terms. So let's look at the next little eight, and Filip Krajinovic is someone who's been playing some good tennis, doesn't have a lot of wins to back, back his tally, but he's definitely been hitting a very sweet ball. And then if you look this little eight players here, so I think, Mert, is it safe to say Krajinovic, Tsitsipas, are you going to pencil that in the third round, or you think there are enough guys in this that can prevent that from happening?
Well, that's why I picked Krajinovic and Tsitsipas to play each other in the third round. And I don't think anyone else, I mean, you can always count on, you know, that there are a couple of veterans in that little section of the draw, but I don't think they have the game at this point to beat either of them. So I went with those two, and then I also picked Tsitsipas. I think Tsitsipas will come out of this section here without much trouble. I'm going to say that he's going to come out of the section without much trouble.
So can he go to the quarterfinal? Do you fancy him against the likes of Rublev Shapovalov?
Yes. Okay. Now, by the way, I hope. I would love Dennis to end up playing Tsitsipas in the fourth round. I would love to see that match. I would absolutely love to see that match. And in my opinion, if Dennis makes it that far to play Stefanos, he might be pumped up or, you know, feeling good about his game, and he will give Tsitsipas a good match. But I ultimately have Tsitsipas coming out of that section all the way to the quarterfinals, and dare I say to the semis. But we can pick that up.
Oh, so Tsitsipas and Rublev is your quarterfinal. So Damien, how do you see Stefanos Tsitsipas and Filip Krajinovic, and who's coming out from this section to play Shapovalov, and who's the winner of that section and goes on to play Rublev in the quarters? A couple of questions rolled into one.
Yeah, Krajinovic really disappointed me at the US Open. He was playing so well coming into the event. Also, the first two rounds were great. And then he, you know, when it felt like he might have a great chance for a deep slam run, like he'd only run into Djokovic in the quarters. And then, you know, Djokovic obviously wasn't there. But his loss to Goffin and also the loss to Raonic in Cincinnati, I think he's still struggling to. I don't like calling people chokers, but you know, he's had so many matches in his career where he just couldn't really live up to the task. Not because he doesn't have the skill, but because of the fact that he simply fades away mentally at some point. And that's why I would definitely stick with Tsitsipas here. I think I would like to answer this question tomorrow after Tsitsipas' match against Garin in Hamburg.
Yes,
because honestly, Tsitsipas in Rome obviously had that terrible loss to Sinner. And this week in Hamburg, he's been very impressive. But the opponents he had, so Evans, Cuevas and Lajovic, they weren't really ones that could play a deep, hard, consistent ball to his backhand, which I think should probably be the tactic for most of the players battling him on clay. Garin probably can, so I'll be more confident about that selection tomorrow if he just beats Garin pretty easily. But I think I would also pick him to the fourth round and probably beyond. I was not sold about, on him on clay, but then I also remembered that Wawrinka match last year, and if he can get back to that level, that would be, you know, that would be definitely enough, I think, to get to the quarters from here.
Yeah, by the way, Tsitsipas and Krajinovic played last year at the French Open. They played a very, very close match. Tsitsipas won at the end at the in four sets, but it was a very close match. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Sorry, Saqib, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. So
I was going to just add to the popular consensus of what Damien already said. The Wawrinka match is one of the highlight matches, but I think the year before, I became a believer when Tsitsipas stretched Dominic Thiem, I think in their second or third round at Roland Garros in 2018, and they played a very entertaining four-setter. And to me, that was, again, Tsitsipas was coming to the net in trouble team, you know, his court position from the back, but I think that made me a believer that he's going to be in the mix on clay. So let's look further, gentlemen. This very interesting draw sheet, and now we have officially reached the bottom half, and first name at the bottom half is Gael Monfils. So Mert, he is someone, you know, the French, of course, this is the world, this tournament means the world to them, and Monfils is closing in the twilight of this very entertaining career, but he would definitely want one thing. There is a deep Grand Slam run and no better venue than home, but due to coronavirus, like we were talking, he had a lot of momentum, had match points against Djokovic in Dubai, and now he's barely, he probably didn't even win a set. Or he won one set and two losses in two back-to-back tournaments. So if you look at this section here, he starts against Bublik, who's again a very entertaining player in his own right. How do you fancy Monfils' chances in this section? And can he go as far as third round or fourth round? Look at this little section and give us your views.
Yeah, I think he's got a great section. And I totally understand the need to write Monfils off. Because he's, you know, he lost in straight sets to Kropfer and Hanfman this year so far in the clay court leading up to Roland Garros, and he hasn't had a particular good time since he came back, and especially people who nowadays like to write him off are his longtime fans because they've been disappointed so many times. But looking at this draw right here, and just like you mentioned, Saqib, you know, Monfils at Roland Garros is a different story than Monfils everywhere else. Monfils also came last year into Roland Garros not having done well on clay, and yet he went all the way to the fourth round and ended up losing to Thiem, the eventual finalist, which is not a surprise, him losing to Thiem. And I think actually the same thing may happen here. I totally can see him reaching the quarterfinal here and losing to Thiem in the quarterfinals, because I'm looking at his draw. He's playing Bublik. Yes, people love Bublik, and I enjoy watching him too. I don't think he's consistent enough to beat Monfils, unless Monfils has a really bad day at the office. I mean, look, if Gael has a bad day at the office, he can lose to anyone. But I'm just going to presume that he will at least be able to show up, or at least put up average level of his tennis throughout a best of five set match. And if he does that, I don't see him losing to anybody really, or being in danger against anybody until third, fourth round. And in the fourth round, he would have to play someone like Schwartzman, Chorich, or possibly Kecmanovic, who has a very interesting first round match with Schwartzman. But against any of those guys, Monfils still has a chance to win at Roland Garros. So I'm going to, you know, perhaps maybe it's the pick that I can back up the least, but I'm going to put Monfils to the quarterfinals there.
Oh, Damien, come right in, and if you have a urge to disagree, I want to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a tough section. I mean, honestly, out of these 8 or even 16 people, if we're looking, you know, for the whole section, that's pretty much, honestly, anyone reaching the fourth round wouldn't surprise me. The big names in these sections aren't the ones that I really feel confident in winning when they're the favorites. Bublik actually showed some great clay court tennis in Hamburg this week. But kind of as Mert mentioned, I mean, it was mostly against, not against players who are such solid counter punchers. Like he played a great game against Felix Auger-Aliassime, but I presume against Monfils the match will look quite a bit different. And yeah, if Monfils gets some match rhythm, then the next matches shouldn't be too hard for him. Taylor Fritz, actually, I mean, like a couple years back, I remember it physically hurt my eyes a bit to watch him play on clay, like especially his movement. But it's been getting better. I think he's one of the best Americans on clay right now. And just because I don't feel that confident in Monfils, I maybe would go for Fritz to reach the fourth round here. But he has a pretty tough opening round too. Tomasz Machacz is a very talented young Czech player. He's already had three matches to play here, so maybe with that match rhythm, also as we said, the conditions might be different. But I would probably go for Taylor Fritz, but you know, zero confidence speaking from that section at all. I don't know if I was supposed to talk about the next eight players too or not.
Yeah, this is good. I mean, the faster we can move through, because sometimes you know, all three of us, we can break it down very granularly, but then we're also eating up, you know, time. We haven't talked about Nadal or Djokovic or team. So this is good, but yeah. So yeah, feel free to, jump. So if you...
Okay, so we actually talked about this before, like this whole section of 16 players is one that I have very little confidence about. Borna Coric maybe can be very dangerous here. He hasn't had a big run at the French Open yet, I don't think, but he's done good stuff on clay. Diego Schwartzman just doesn't strike me as someone who wins that much when he's treated as the favorite. I mean, we've seen it many times, I think, with him when it seemed like he has a very favorable draw, and then he just went out to some weird opponents, like for example at the US Open this year against Cameron Norrie. Of course, he's coming from a great achievement, from the best tournament of his life, but I'm definitely not confident in him. I'm gonna go for a bit of a, yeah, it's not a weird pick, but maybe Borna Coric can be my quarterfinalist from that section. But then again, zero confidence in that, really. Anything can happen.
Okay. So Mart has Monfils and you have Coric. No, that's good. This is some right.
I'm on Damien's boat though. I have a very little confidence in Monfils. I mean, I'm picking that. That's a tough section, no doubt.
All right. So let's keep moving our way further into draws. Stanislas Wawrinka and Stan Wawrinka. He's not Stanislas Wawrinka. That name change. Stan Wawrinka against Andy Murray starts of this little section here, and whoever wins this one has no shortage of experience, and then can play potentially Felix Auger-Aliassime if Wawrinka is the winner, the seeds hold on. So Mert, how do you see this little section of eight, and who goes to the round of 16 from here?
Yeah, this is a very interesting section. Maybe it's a stronger section than this whole quarter. Actually, is a stronger quarter than the one above or the one below. But I got Wawrinka here, Saki, without just going into too many details. I have Wawrinka reaching the fourth round. I do not have Auger-Aliassime reaching third round. I'm actually going to pick an upset there. I'm going to go with Nishioka over Auger-Aliassime. And then Nishioka and Wawrinka in the third round, and I penciled in Wawrinka in the fourth round to play against team. The only thing that I would like to just make a couple of comments about is the Auger-Aliassime and Nishioka match. The reason why I'm picking that as an upset, and by the way, you know, that is just what it is. It would be an upset. I mean, on paper, Auger-Aliassime is the favorite there. But I just think that Auger-Aliassime struggles with players who get a lot of balls back on clay and keep him deep behind the baseline. And I think Nishioka has both of those abilities. In fact, it's two of his assets. So that's why I believe it'll be a tough five-setter for Fiddies.
Okay, so we have Monfils and team for Murd in the quarters. Damien, you can pick your quarterfinalists here. Who's going to play Borna Coric in the quarters from this 16?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to stick with team again. Just to talk about this a bit, Casper Ruud is still in the Hamburg semifinals. He's going to play Rublev tomorrow, so maybe some wariness coming into the third round. But then again, I kind of don't see him challenging team on this, you know, energy on these slow courts, where team is going to have so much time to just outpower him. I mean, his shots are his top, very, you know, very loopy topspin shots are great, but I think he also likes being, you know, having some time to maybe just move the opponent around, and Thiem is not gonna give him that. I think as much as Thiem's draw seems very tough at, you know, just at first glance, then Cilic is not really a factor in clay events most of the time, unless he's in really great form, and he's not. I actually have Jack Sock beating Riley Opelka in the first round, so, but Opelka would undoubtedly be a tougher opponent for Thiem, just because of, you know, with his serve he can make the game just about a couple of points here or there. But I don't expect Thiem to struggle that much. I think if Thiem was to play Ruud in the third round, it would be, you know, obviously a blockbuster, something to watch, but I actually would expect it to be a bit anticlimactic. I think, especially with Thiem coming with so much confidence after winning the US Open, there are some players who had, actually a lot of players who had, you know, these hangovers after winning their maiden Grand Slams, but I can't give a series like a, you know, a reason for that, but I just don't think Thiem is one of them. I think he's been around for so much, he's been very close to winning that Grand Slam title for so long, he's had a couple of tries where he couldn't do it, and I think that's gonna help him just to feel more natural in this situation. And in that section with Wawrinka and Ožer Aliassime, I again have very little confidence picking here. Maybe Dominic Koepfer can be very dangerous. I mean, Wawrinka has just split up with Magnus Norman. He's, you know, that's probably also says something about how, you know, where he is mentally, where that he's not feeling all right with his game. So maybe I would pick Dominic Koepfer to reach the forefront here, but then Thiem, of course, to go to the quarters.
Yeah, we'll talk a little more Dominic Thiem because it looks like we all have him in the quarters. So let's look at the next section. Sasha Zverev coming from that heartbreak of a US Open final. Opens campaign is Denis Novak and Mert in this section of eight, going up to Alex de Minaur. Do you see anyone stopping Sasha? You think this is his section to lose?
Yeah, no, I'm on the Sasha train and I'm riding it as far as it goes. I think he's coming out of this section.
All right. So, Mertlin, his potential fourth round opponent, according to the seeds, is David Goffin, another solid player, proven player, but he has a little tricky section, opens against the talented Jannik Sinner. And then we have Roussevori, which I'm going to bring Damien in at some point. And there's Benoit Paire, you know, the ever mercurial. Look at these eight. And who's going to be playing Sasha in the round of 16 out of these eight?
Yeah, I'm not very concerned personally with the four players in Benoit's section. I think I'm a lot more interested in Sinner versus Goffin. And then whoever wins that versus Roussevori, you know, assuming that he gets past Bonzi, but I, you know, it's going to be a strange request, but I would love to see Sinner upset Goffin and play Roussevori in the second round. I'd love to see that match, Roussevori versus Sinner, and see the winner of that, see how far that player can go. I mean, because I think in that section, if Roussevori or Sinner were to come out of that door, those four players, I think they would actually have a good chance to win their third round also, and then would end up playing Zverev in the fourth round. I'd like to see that.
I think that makes three of us, but I would like Damien to weigh on this. So we talked about Roussevori when he was in the podcast, and then Sinner, everybody's been talking about him for more than a year and a half, and some people even longer, who he was, you know, whose radar he was on. So Damien, mouth-watering stuff. David Goffin, Jannik Sinner. Potentially, the winner takes Roussevori. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Sinner has slowed down a bit, let's say. I mean, he still has a lot of time, of course, but I kind of get the feel that with his game plan, game style, how, you know, the accelerations, I mean, the they're amazing when it works, but he has these days when it's simply, you know, the inconsistency is too much to deal with. I mean, I kind of start getting the feeling that it might be a consistent issue with him over his, maybe not the whole career, but over the next couple of years. But he's always a good pick to win an upset match, and I'm definitely not too confident in Goffin's chances to, in Goffin's form. He's also, you know, I think clay is actually his weakest surface. I'm not sure if there, I think his results have been pretty similar on all surfaces, but you know, he just taking the ball early, that doesn't work out that well on clay. So I think Sinner has a great shot there. When it comes to Reservoir, yeah, we talked about him. I wouldn't expect him to be that much of a factor on clay. He did some, I think he reached a final of the Challenger last year in Augsburg. I think he lost to Yannick Hanfmann, but I wouldn't expect him to be that much of a factor on clay. I would certainly pick Sinner or Goffin to the winner of that match to go to all the way to round four, actually, because as Mert said, the players in first section do not really strike me as ones that could go that far. Back to the Zverev section, I would just like to just, you know, say a word on Marco Cecchinato. Seeing him in the qualies, I think he's been playing great. He's obviously a semi-finalist from 2 years ago, but he's never won a Grand Slam match in any other event. So that's actually very surprising, but I think it's the perfect opportunity to change that. And I think I would really love to see him play Zverev in round three. And it's definitely what I'm picking. And then I guess I would go for Zverev too. I mean, he's even when he's not playing well, I talked about this when it came to Djokovic earlier. He also has that quality of when he's not playing well, still being able to find a way to win matches. And I think it's going to be very useful if he has a bad day at the office against Cecchinato or against Sinner Goffin.
No, I think very well said. If there's a Sasha Zverev fan listening, that's a very good to hear, because all this time, you know, we were waiting for the package to arrive. If this was an Amazon delivery now, I think we're pretty near. Mm-hmm. And it took more than 3.5 years. And that, I think that goes well for so many other guys like Koji Aliassime and so many other younger guys. There's a lot of work to be done. So well said, Damien. Yeah, so I'm penciling Zverev for both of you in the quarterfinal. Is that a go?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so last section, but then at least we're the 12-time champion. We're looking at, let's go from the bottom now, with Rafael Nadal starting with Gerasimov, and then potentially Dan Evans. Nishikori is there, who didn't look good this week. And then there's John Isner, there's Sebastian Korda, who qualified for his first Roland Garros, and Fabio Fognini. So from this 16, Mert, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, I'm going to pencil Nadal in, but I'll let you do the honors.
Yeah, you can double pencil him in if you want to. But the only player here who has any chance, and when I say a chance, I mean any amount of chance, whether however many minuscule might be, in my opinion, of course. I mean, someone else might disagree. But if Fognini does make it to the fourth round, you know, if he wins 1, 2, 3 matches and then plays Nadal on a fourth match in a round of 16, then I think it'll be interesting. You know, it's not a 100% W for Nadal. I think Fognini will at least try to come up with the goods to beat Rafa, and he's done it before. That's where it makes the difference, you know, when those two play. But outside of that, I don't see Rafa having any trouble getting coming out of this section and reaching the quarterfinals, especially if he doesn't have to face Fabio in the round of 16. Mm-hmm.
And even Fabio, by his own mercurial standards and whatever inconsistent standards, I'll just add to it. I agree with what you said, but Fabio has every chance to lose to the other 7 players in his section.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And that's why I kept on saying if he gets to the fourth round, right? Yeah. Because it's very doubtful that he gets that far, considering his form of late. You know, if only here he plays one match, 2 good matches, and then he starts feeling good about himself, and then he plays a third match and wins in straight sets, you know, showing, putting on display his talent, then maybe there's a chance. But yes, no, you're right.
Sure. So, Damien, your view on Nadal to Fognini, anyone else who can spoil this party? It's clearly Rafa's section to lose.
Yeah, definitely. But Fognini is, as you said, I mean, he's not definitely not a certainty. He's definitely not 100% to get there. I actually, you know, the match between the two qualifying guys, Pedro Martinez and Aleksandar Vukic, that's actually, alongside Cecchinato and Altmaier, these were like my, you know, the guys who impressed me the most, both in qualifying and in the previous weeks. And I'm actually kind of bummed that they have to play each other. I mean, you know, it's a great chance for one of them. But then again, I think if they were placed in some other sides of the draw, they might have been able to both win their first match. But I think one of them is going to have a great chance against Fognini. And I think if it was to happen, I would probably even pick them over either Korda, Seppi, Bonchetri or Isner. So I think if Fabio is not, you know, he's just not in the right mindset to play, then Martinez Vukic would maybe be even one of them would be my pick for the forefront, maybe, if, you know, instead of Fabio. But obviously it's Nadal's to lose, that's for sure. And Evans Nishikori is actually, you know, Evans is not that good on clay. Nishikori has been pretty terrible since he came back, but it's gonna be a very exciting match to watch. Just both of these guys play a very, you know, their games are very aesthetically pleasing, and I'm really looking forward to that. Just to, you know, just for a bit of a treat for the eye.
If you guys don't mind me just adding one footnote in here, because I always try to give credit to these guys who stick around for 8, 9, 10, 11 years, playing lower level tournaments and lower ranked tournaments, but work their butts off to get somewhere, to get somewhere in their career. And Steven Diaz here of Canada, who came from qualifying, if I'm not wrong, this is his first main draw major in his career. And I believe he's 30 years old. I might be wrong by a year or two. I believe he's 30 years old and he's been a pro for 10 years, 11 years. And this is the first time he's making it to the main draw of a major. I mean, I think I'm right on all this.
So yeah, I'm 29, I think, but you're definitely right. It's the first time.
Yeah, I wanted to tip my hat off to him. I don't know if he'll ever hear it, but then again, I don't know if anybody will mention it either.
No, you're right. I mean, and same goes for Emilio Gomez, Andre's son, you know, whose 30-year anniversary podcast we released. And same thing, you know, he's been around on the, you know, on these challenger, on the minor league of tennis, and trying to make an, you know, earnest living, and finally gets his moment under the sun. And you're right, these are like great stories. And, you know, we don't talk about this often because, you know, we are talking about the arms race, that's the goat race, and you know, whether, you know, certain players like team's going to win or Sasha. So yeah, you're right. I mean, these are like absolute, you know, gem of individual accomplishments within the main draw. So we've spent close to an hour, and, you know, as expected, you know, with this kind of knowledge. So let's try to wrap in the next 10 minutes before you go to the women. So I'm going to just read the quarterfinals you both have predicted. So Mert, you have Djokovic Berrettini. So that should be Djokovic in the semifinals, if you keep going through the draw.
Yes, you want me to keep going?
No, I'm just asking you and Damien, Djokovic RBA, who goes to the semis?
Djokovic.
Okay, so both of you have Djokovic, and then there was Rublev Tsitsipas in the first, the second quarter.
I'm going with Tsitsipas. There's Medvedev, but I'm going with Tsitsipas. Djokovic Tsitsipas semis.
Okay, and Damien, how do you see that one?
I think I went Medvedev Tsitsipas, right? I think so. I'll go for Tsitsipas again, just because I have a lot more confidence that he'll even get there.
Okay, so Djokovic and Tsitsipas, we have a unanimous agreement between both analysts here, and that's the first semifinal. And if we scroll down, it's Monfils versus Thiem for Mert. And Mert already said it's going to be Monfils, but I want to hear it from him.
Thiem will get Monfils. I got Thiem and Nadal here.
Okay. And Damien?
Yeah, me too, of course. That's
all right. So that's
predictable.
Yeah, that's Tsitsipas is officially joining the big leagues if he's going to be playing semis along these three. That's quite an arrival. So not try to rush the show. So Damien, you want to go first? Who's in the French Open final and who wins it?
Okay, I mean, Djokovic is the one that I feel confident about. Team Nadal, yeah, I mean, I was one of the guys who actually, you know, before last year's edition, I remember saying that team is going to win the whole event. I actually think he had a very good chance. And the reason why this final wasn't a classic was only the scheduling, because of how destroyed it was by the rain. Nadal actually played Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday, and team had to play 4 days in a row. And I think that played a huge part in how this final looked. For two sets, team pretty much went toe-to-toe with Nadal. And then he just, you know, faded away physically. I would really like to pick team here. And I think I might, but it's obviously, you know, it's a bit of a preference pick, not in the sense that I don't like Rafa, but in the sense that I would like to see someone fresh do well at the French Open.
Sure. So, Mert, before you give your semis pick, actually for both of you, I thought Zverev could challenge Nadal. I'm not saying he's going to win, but I think in these conditions, if it's under the light, that could be a very, you know, mouth-watering matchup if Zverev comes out and leaves his double faults in the locker room.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And in fact, the quarterfinals, you know, I picked team Nadal, Djokovic and Tsitsipas to go to the semis, but none of the quarterfinals for me are 99% to 1% picks. You know, there's a small chance of upset in each of these quarters, you know, some less than the others. But no, you're right. That's probably the quarterfinal that has that does have a bit more of a upset chance, depending on what kind of, you know, which version of Sasha shows up. Although, let's not kid ourselves. You know, Rafa will be a heavy favorite regardless.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. Yeah,
no,
I mean,
no, right.
Yeah.
But okay, so going to the semis, moving on to the semis, I'm going to speak in terms that I usually hate speaking, using like numbers and percentages and all that stuff, just to kind of show you how flimsy I feel about my picks from this point forward. So I'm going to go with Nadal over team 50.2% to 49.8%, only because it's the French Open and Rafa's won it 12 times. So Rafa is going to go to the finals there. And I'm going to go with Djokovic over Tsitsipas, 60-40, 60% to 40%. I do believe Tsitsipas has a chance for an upset if he makes it this far. But it's a 65 to 35, 60 to 40. It's still a clear Djokovic favorite match. And then in the final, Nadal-Djokovic, I'm again going with Nadal 50.1% to Djokovic 49.9%, only because Rafa is more proven at the French at Roland Garros.
And as
you can see, these are all flimsy picks, very precarious picks.
Yeah, but you know, like the consistency of the top men in Nadal at Roland Garros, you know, makes it a very safe pick. So, Damien, let's close the argument or the discussion on the men's draw. Who's winning this final, team or Djokovic?
Yeah, so I have team or Djokovic. If it was a match of a, you know, just a semifinal, a quarterfinal, I would pick team. I'm pretty sure about that. But just because I picked him over Rafa before, I'm going to go with Djokovic because I don't expect him to beat the two of them in succession.
All right, so there you go. Well, you heard it from both here, and you can harass them or praise them once this tournament is over. You know where to find them on Twitter, or come looking for me, and I'll say if they have blocked your account, I'll pass the message. So let's look at the women's draw. I mean, this is, again, Simona Halep is at the top, and I'll give my two cents. I think she's the player to beat. And Mert, let's quickly look at her section and the section of 16. Is there anyone who's stopping her from reaching a quarterfinal or even earlier? Is there any upset alert in Simona's section?
I don't think so. I know people are thinking that first of all, I think he'll go past the first two rounds.
Okay.
I mean, I'd be shocked. There's no such thing as a guaranteed winner in tennis, but I'd be shocked if he gets upset in the first round or in the second round. Again, Soribas Tormo, first round opponent, then Beguin Teichmann winner. Yeah, they're both respectable players, but no, not here. I mean, not here against Halep. I don't give them much of a chance. But in the third round, Halep is going to play Anisimova, against whom she suffered a loss last year. But I do feel that that was tactically a match where Anisimova played with great tactics and Halep made no adjustments for some reason, even though it was very clear what she had to do. She kept on sticking with the cross-court rallies with Anisimova, allowing Anisimova to step in inside the court and cut off the angle and take the ball early and win the point. In fact, I counted the rallies where Halep did change direction and go for down-the-line shots. And it's weird because Simona has a great down-the-line shot for her backhand down the line. Acceleration is one of the best. And she barely used it. The 11 points in which she used it, she won 10 of them. And but she didn't use it. She just stuck with the, for some reason, she stuck with the she didn't make any adjustments. So I don't think that's going to happen again. So I think she'll get past Anisimova here, fourth round. I don't see who could challenge her in the fourth round. There are some very good names there, by the way, very interesting names. There's Xu Weishei, there's Swiatek, there's Vondrousova, Yastremska, and Gavrilova is a first-round match, one of the most interesting first-round matches for me, is between Yastremska and Gavrilova. And all of those names eventually, including Anisimova, go to Halep, are all in Simona's quarter. And I just don't see any of them topping Simona until the quarterfinals. In the quarterfinals, and I don't know if you want to go that far, but then there's a very interesting quarters after Halep. But I'll let you guys speak before we get there, I guess.
So, Damien, yeah, so just add to what Mert said, if you see Halep's quarter playing out any differently, any dangers, any upset alert, give your views on Simona Halep's quarter, and do you see her going to the quarterfinals from here?
Yeah, I very much agree that Halep is definitely the one to beat, not only in this section, but also in the whole event. We actually, I don't think we had that much of a clear favorite in a women's slam besides Serena in the past 10 years or so. But anyway, I think, someone who could upset her early is someone like Anisimova, or for example, Ostapenko, to whom she lost 3 years ago here. Someone who can just redline her game, take advantage of that maybe a little bit too much space that Halep can sometimes, give the opponent. Maybe that's someone who can do it, but it would still be a lot of an ask. I mean, a huge of an ask. Jill Teichmann has been doing well recently. Anisimova hasn't at all, and I also don't think that's happening again. But I would still pick her to the fourth round, but I kind of think that that there's that tiny bit of a chance that an opponent like maybe Daria Jastremska, maybe Iga Świątek. By the way, Mert, your pronunciation of Świątek was, I think, the best I've ever heard from a non-Polish speaker. So huge respect for that.
Thank you.
I absolutely love the first round match between Świątek and Vondroušová. Both players did really well here last year. And I think it's going to be a cracker. Although Świątek hasn't been playing well recently, but I hope she can get her level up for that big match. So I think I give Halep a better chance to lose, bigger chance to lose than Mert does. But I also obviously stick with her to come through the quarterfinals here.
And just to add to what Damien, did you finish? I didn't mean to cut you.
Yeah, I was finished.
Just to add something very small to what Damien said there. He talked about that section with Świątek and Xu Weishei and Vondrousova. There's also Bouchard there, who reached the finals of Istanbul Cup kind of unexpectedly. So I'll be interested to see how she does. And I mean, if any listeners want advice on what section to watch in the first, 4 or 5 days on the women's draw, and that little section is super interesting there, with starting with Yastremska going down to Vondrousova. In other words, that section is going to determine Simona Halep's fourth round opponent, assuming Halep makes it there. And that's an interesting section right there.
Yeah, Gavrilova coming back to right after a very long break. I mean, she's played an ITF event in France, but she hasn't. She had like a year. I think.
She has a good. If I'm not wrong, she has a pretty good head-to-head against Yastremska too. So that should be an interesting match. That's actually one of my personal most intriguing first-round matches on the women's side.
Sure. So I'm taking notes. So yeah, let's Mert, keep this moving forward. And then the next quarter has some experience in Kuznetsova. There's Kiki Bertens, and at the top of the section is Johanna Konta against Coco Gauff, and then is also the inform, at least for me, Maria Sakkari. So Mert, break it down. Who's going to be playing Simona Halep in the quarterfinals?
Yeah. Okay. In the quarterfinals from that section, I have Kiki Bertens playing the quarterfinals, but I'm open. I'm completely ready to be convinced otherwise. If you want to come up with a Sakkari is a good one to argue for. Sakkari also has kind of a rough section, little section, I'd say. Shelby Rogers is underrated on any surface, I think, and she might end up playing her. And then there's Johanna Konta coming from there too. And Konta is playing Corey Gauff first round, which is a very interesting match, although I'd pick Konta there without much hesitation personally. But okay, so then you have the winners of those coming to the fourth round to play the player coming out of that next section, which also has some interesting names, but I think not as loaded as the section of Sakkari. So, Sakib, if you're a Sakkari fan, if Sakkari makes it through her little section, which I think is not an easy one, and ends up beating, ends up facing Kiki Bertens or Kuznetsova or someone else who's coming from that next section and goes to the quarterfinals against Halep, she'll be there as a tested player. And that's how you want to face Simona Halep, having already proven in the previous rounds that you can face the toughest competition and come out on top.
Sure. No, I mean, I've interviewed her a long time ago in Miami, and that time she was an up-and-comer. Then I spoke a year later to Thomas Johansson, who was then coaching her. So I've followed her stock, and she's really coming, delivering the goods. But Grand Slam is where, the greatness or success is measured. So, yeah, I'm keeping tabs on her progress, but definitely. I also like Kiki Bertens. I think wasn't she supposed to win the French Open a couple of years ago? She's one of those players, right, whose game is tailor-made for clay?
Yes. She's got heavy spin. Yeah.
So, Damien, your call. I mean, who's playing Halep in the quarters?
Yeah, this is a section where I'm actually going to go for some craziness, and I'm actually planning to go for some crazy picks in these women's draw.
Sure.
Kiki Bertens is actually one of these players who I always pictured winning a slam. I just don't think it's this year, simply because of how little she had in the warm-ups. She retired against Ostapenko this week. I just don't think she's there. She's not 100% match fit. And I think Sara Errani can be a great test for her. Errani has done really well to come through the qualifying event. She had a very easy draw in the first two rounds, but then beat Teresa Martinsova, which I didn't think she would. And now she's actually kind of my pick to the fourth round. I mean, she's a former finalist. She hasn't played a slam main draw in 2 years since Roland Garros 2018, actually. So two years and a couple of months. But I think out of that small section from Kuznetsova to Bertens, if Bertens is not right, obviously, if Bertens can't find her game, then Errani has a very good chance to go that far. And from that section from Konta to Sakkari, I actually wanted to pick Shelby Rogers. We've seen what she did at the US Open. She's also a former quarterfinalist at the French Open. Her game is really well suited to clay too. If it does happen indeed, Rogers Errani, by the way, I don't think it will, but if it does, it's like I won the lottery pretty much. But maybe I would go with Shelby Rogers to reach the quarterfinals again. She, the US Open round wasn't the one of, she's been she's been playing really well since she came back from an injury break to I'm not sure. No, we didn't talk about the quarterfinals yet. So, okay. So I pick Shelby Rogers to reach the quarters here.
Nice. So that's an interesting pick. Again, you know, her movement is something I'll be following after, you know, your advice. Again, I fancy most Americans on hard courts, but yeah, Shelby Rogers, someone who's a good follow, how her draw unpacks and if she's in the last eight. So Mert, let's quickly look at Elena Svitolina. Sasha Zverev has definitely made steady progress. They were the two players we talked about in the podcast on both tours that were supposed to do well on the single-week tournaments, but in the two-week tournaments, they would always find a way to fade away. Sasha's made semis and finals. You think, Svitolina, what do we expect in this fortnight from her, and by looking at her draw first?
Yeah, I think she's going to be consistent and go through the first week again. The challenge for her will be in the second week, as you just mentioned.
Anyone in this section of eight prevent her from round of 16?
I don't think so. I like pretty much Svitolina's chance, and I'm going to even say perhaps in straight sets against everybody. Blinkova probably is the toughest is the toughest opponent she may face. Although, you know, Blinkova is playing Astra Sharma in the first round, who got in as a lucky loser. I'm not expecting an upset there or anything, but that's an interesting matchup in terms of game matchup. But if we get past that, I don't see there's Ekaterina Alexandrova, of whom I'm a fan, but she hasn't done well lately. So I'm going to stay away from that. I don't think anybody is in a position to stop Svitolina here from reaching, let's say, I don't see it happening all the way to the quarterfinals.
Okay. All right. So before I go to Damien, Contavite Garcia, that's like, again, a mouth-watering. I've said this phrase a few times, but that's a pretty good matchup. What's going on with Garcia? Again, we haven't done this what's going on part, but she was someone who I thought has a lot of potential. Coming in unseeded here, the home slam. What is the report card on her, Mert, if someone's, you know, looking, you know, at this and say, why isn't she seeded and they haven't paid attention what happened in the last year or so?
Well, the thing about Garcia is she's able to play couple of really good rounds and get great wins. For example, here, she's playing Anett Kontaveit, first round. This is a very tough first round for any seeded player to have to play Garcia. First round at Roland Garros is very tough, and especially at Roland Garros. So she takes the balls early. She made some adjustments to her game. She used to take the returns, for example, super early. I'm talking like a meter or two inside the baseline, and even then step in one more step when the opponent tosses the ball. Now she appears to have backed off a little bit, you know, not by much, but still a little bit, to try to get the return in instead of going for the winner. That's what, and I'm talking just one small adjustment here that she's among many that she's been making over the years to her game. But the problem with Garcia is she's an athletic player, a smart player on the court with a lot of variety of strokes. But for some reason, she's unable to keep the consistency up for more than two or three or four matches, even if she plays one or two great matches. And I think it catches up to her in majors. So let's say here, she's playing Kontaveit first round. Even if she gets the upset here, I'm not sure how far she's going to be able to go. She's got Elise Mertens, you know, in the third round, if she makes it that far. And then even if she gets past that, Svitolina, it's just a rough task for Garcia to complete without much confidence. I don't think she has much confidence at this point. But, you know, I can't get inside her head.
Yeah. Confidence is the key, and confidence is a byproduct of the other C word, which is consistency. And if you are not performing on the WTA Tour week in, week out, you're going to be likely unseated. So, Damien, is Elena Svitolina the woman to beat in this section to go to the quarterfinals? If not, how do you fancy someone upsetting her, or who's on your shortlist in this section?
Yeah, I have her in the fourth round, although mostly because of how weak that little section is. I mean, no disrespect to Alexandrova, but I think she's not really a player who can upset Svitolina here. I mean, Svitolina reached the final this week in Strasbourg for pretty much out of nowhere. She played in the second round. She played Magdalinette, and it really wasn't a great game. I mean, the match was totally on Linette's racket, but she just didn't manage to close out sets. And then today, Svitolina played actually her first good match in a while against Sabalenka, I think. And that run this week is going to massively help her, especially as the opponents are not going to be too tough on her, at least until the fourth round. And actually, that section from Kontaveit to Mertens is actually like all of the players are definitely not ones that you see winning Grand Slams, at least not yet. But everyone could make a great run. It's really like a quietly a great section. Garcia is, you know, we've seen that she's not a great opponent to get in a first round of a slam many times. Well, at the US Open, it was a second round, but you know, Karolina Pliskova got that feeling there. But I was pretty disappointed when Garcia came back to Europe. She played in Istanbul. Obviously, it was a very quick transition to clay, but both her win against Kagla Bujkakchaya and then her loss to Martinsova were, you know, it was again that Garcia who has no confidence in herself at all. Definitely not that player who won these two events in China in a row, Wuhan and Beijing, if I'm not mistaken. And even though it's a very hard first round for her, I would probably pick Annette Kontaveit to reach the forefront here. I really liked her game before the bubble in New York on clay in Europe. I think she has a great chance to get out of here. Obviously, Alice Mertens is there. She's done really well at the US Open and in pretty much all the tournaments she played after the restart. But she's always kind of under the radar, even though, like, at least for me, even though I know she's excellent, I always kind of sleep on her, and I'm going to do that again. It's going to be Annette Kontaveit for me, and I am going to pick Annette Kontaveit over Elina Svitolina. I'm just not sure that Svitolina is... Again, as you said, confidence is a really good thing and to have, and I don't feel like... Watching Svitolina recently, I don't feel like she's in a good place with her mind and her game.
Sure. No, that's going to be a decent pick. And staring at the next section, you can't help but not look at the mouth-watering fourth round potential between Vika Azarenka and Serena Williams. They played a real classic at the US Open a few weeks ago. So, Mert, how much of a reality is that match given the form of Vika and Serena? Serena hasn't played, I think, any warm-up on clay. So break that section away, and will we get that match, and who wins that match if we get it?
Yeah, I think we're likely to get it. I would put Vika's chances to make it to the fourth round even higher than Serena's chances, which are both good. And I think Vika, for example, has a good first round match against Danka Kovinic, who should give Vika a good match enough to where she will be, you know, let's put it this way, ready to go for her second round and further, you know, for in the tournament. And then I know there are a lot of Putintseva fans. She's got some loyal followers who believe that she can, you know, beat anybody on a given day. I don't think it'll be enough to beat Azarenka. So I see Azarenka reaching fourth round. Serena Williams should reach it too, although her road is just a tiny bit more rocky. You know, there Pironkova is there, by the way. She got a wild card, and she drew right there by Serena. They could face each other in the second round, but Pironkova has to beat Petkovic first. But you know, at the end of the day, if you said, "Hey, Mert, you got to give me an answer. Who's gonna be in the fourth round there? Who are the two players?" I would have to go with Vika and Serena.
And who goes to the quarterfinal? Because I'm not making Vika. A job easy.
Okay,
so,
I'm going with Azarenka. Yeah.
Okay, Azarenka, Svitolina. So, Damien, same question for you. Who's playing Svitolina in the quarterfinal?
Yeah, Azarenka's chances are better than Serena's for me, just because I don't really see a player in Azarenka's section that could upset her in this form, obviously. And as much as I was fairly uncertain if she can keep it up after after Cincinnati, the Western and Southern Open, I wasn't certain if she's going to keep it up for the US Open. After US Open, I was really unsure if on clay it would be the same, but it's all looking good. And I just don't see a player in her section that can trouble her in her form. Well, trouble, yes, but not beat. And when it comes to Serena, I think the one that that would be a slight upset alert for me is Pironkova again. She's never beaten Serena, but their match at the US Open, like if she didn't fade away physically, it would have been much more tighter in that third set. Pironkova's game on clay was never really, it was never her best surface, but she also reached the quarterfinals here 4 years ago. Yeah, 4 years ago. So that would be a slight upset alert. But if I have to, give picks, then it's still an Azarenka Serena match for me. Before the US Open, there was that talk about, before the US Open semifinals, there was that talk about a possible mental block that Azarenka might have against Serena in slams, because she's never beaten her in slams. She had never beaten her in slams, but now she's done it. And I think on clay, she might even have a way better chance to do it again. I remember their match like 2 or 3 years ago. I might be messing up the years completely, but there was a match between them at Roland Garros where Serena was going into the slam in great shape and Azarenka was just not playing her best tennis in a while. And she had a fantastic chance to win it. I'm not sure if she served for the match, but she was in a winning position for a long moment there. And I think on clay, she should be even more favored to win this than at the US Open. Also because of fitness. I mean, she's lost some weight. I think she's fitter than she was in her prime even. And that can't be said about Serena simply because of her age.
Okay. So you both have Azarenka in the quarterfinals. So now is the bottom half. And I know we've taken more than 1 hour, 40 minutes for this podcast. I'm sure you both have places to be or maybe sleep or, giving Damien's time zone. So let's look at the bottom half and try to stay this little quickly with Sabalenka and Garbine Muguruza, the two seeds for a place in the quarterfinals in this section. Murd, I know you were not too sure how this is going to play out, but I think it's Muguruza's to lose. Your thoughts on this?
Yes, actually, this is the one section in the bottom of the women's draw of which I feel most comfortable in giving a name. I think Muguruza should make it to the quarterfinals from here. The match that interests me the most that I would like to mention, and then I'll give the word over to Damien. But Clara Towson of Denmark is coming from qualifying, her first main draw majors. 17-year-old Danish girl, very impressive. I would advise anyone if they're looking for an up and coming player to watch to check out Towson. I was hoping that she'd play a non-seeded player and see how she does, but she drew Jennifer Brady, which is a very, very tough first round. But it's also a tough first round for Brady, depending on how Clara Towson handles, being in the main draw of a major. Big forehand, big game, very fun to watch. I would recommend it to most people.
Okay, yeah, so Damien, yeah,
I completely agree on Muguruza. I think her draw is pretty perfect. I mean, we know how vulnerable she can be in the early rounds of a tournament. She really starts pretty slow before taking tougher and tougher opponents in the third and fourth round. And I think that's great pace for her. I very much agree on Brady Towson. I actually am happy that Clara Towson drew Brady because it's tough, but it's not tough to the extent that she will be crushed. There aren't many players in the draw where she would probably crush her, but with as little as we know about Jen Brady on clay, like she played some good stuff on it last year, but it was before taking up these teaming up with Michelle Gesserer, her coach. It was before that big improvement she's made. So we don't really know if she's gonna be as successful on clay. So I think it's actually in the right ballpark. Clara Dawson has a pretty good chance to upset her in the first round, I think. But then again, even if she went to the third round, I'm still picking Muguruza there, and Muguruza all the way to the quarters.
Okay, so we have a name that's, again, common for both the experts here. And then, Mert, the next one is Rybakina, and there's Kristea in the first round, then there's Mukova. Who do you fancy here to be Garbiñe's quarterfinal opponent?
I'm going to go with Sofia Kenin.
Sofia Kenin, the champion.
I'm going with Sofia Kenin here, and I don't. There are a lot of names. There are a lot of names here. I just don't think that anybody's going to. We would have to wait until the fourth round to see if Rybakina makes it there, or Mukova. If she makes it that far. Donna Vekic can be a tough opponent on any surface or at any given time. But otherwise, I actually like Sofia Kenin's draw here, at least in the first week. So I'm going to pick her to go to face Garbiñe in the quarterfinal.
And Damien, your views on this section, who's Garbiñe Muguruza's quarterfinal? Is it Kenin, or do you see someone else coming out?
Yeah, this section is a bit of a mystery to me too. I actually have a history of underestimating Sofia Kenin, and I'm really afraid to do it again. But my pick for the fourth round will be Donna Vekic, I think. I think she has an easy enough first round, probably also a pretty comfortable second round, and she definitely could battle Kenin for the third if they indeed meet. Rybakina is in the finals this week in Strasbourg, so once again, we don't know if it's gonna be more tiring or more give her confidence. But I think in the women's draw, especially in best of three play, maybe that's more of a confidence boost than anything else. So I would maybe go for Rybakina Vekic then. And actually, I feel like in the women's draw, especially in the bottom half, a couple of these picks are a bit like just. On the spur of the moment, like just I feel like Vekic in the quarters. That's okay. What I'm gonna say.
No, I mean that's what you feel like. Yeah, that's a good pick. I was gonna ask Mert, and then he answered before I asked that. Vekic can mix it up with anyone on a given day, but this has to materialize, I think, into a bigger stage and see if she can deliver. So Petra Kvitova, Mert, is up next as the seventh seed. And sitting top of her section. Not clay is, again, not her best surface. Do you see her making it count this year? Kerber lives there too, and there's Madison Keys in the section of kind of big hitters. How do you see Petra, Keys, and Kerber? Who comes out of it?
Yeah, I'd see Petra Kvitova playing Kerber for a spot in the quarterfinals. I don't see Madison Keys making it that far. I am a fan of Keys, by the way, her game at least, but I don't see her making it that far here. I'm not at the French. I am interested in seeing another youngster here, Leila Fernandez of Canada. She's playing Magdalinette first round. So in terms of first round matches, my personal most intriguing matchup is that one, Fernandez versus Linette. And unlike a couple of the other youngsters that I mentioned before, Fernandez does have some major experience. Like experience in the majors, she played the two majors so far, but yes. So to answer your question, I've got Kvitova versus Kerber, and I'm going to take Kerber to go to the quarterfinals.
Okay, I'm penciling Kerber in for Mert. Damien, your slot.
I want to go Kerber Kvitova again, but with Kvitova coming out on top, a bit of something to say here. Fernandez-Linette is a great matchup. I absolutely agree. I'm not at all confident in Magda's chances here. Kvitova, you said that it's her worst surface, which is obviously true. But she, in her prime, she could play on clay pretty well too. I remember that. Well, it doesn't really have any relevance today, but 5 years ago, and in 2015, that amazing season by Serena in Madrid, there, Kvitova straight setted her in the semifinals, and I think that was maybe the highest level I've ever seen on clay from pretty much anyone. I haven't been following the tennis as long as you guys have, but I don't know, it's been 10 years or so, and for I'm not sure if I've ever seen anyone play as well. Really, that was a fantastic match, and maybe I'm going a bit of sentiment here. Kvitova hasn't really done well in a while, but at the US Open she was solid enough. She only lost to Shelby Rogers in a pretty tight game, so I think she was solid enough for me to believe that if she's match fit, if she's ready, because it hasn't been the case a lot in the past couple of years, then I think I see her going far. I'm not overly sold on Kerber too, but then again, at the US Open she defeated all the opponents that she should have. Like against Jen Brady, she was a little bit outpowered. She was overpowered. Sorry, she was. She didn't really, she didn't have that much. Then again, it's also 2020, and let's remember that Angelique Kerber wins slams in the years, in even years, 2016, 2018, and 2020. So that's the last slam, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
I would go with Kvitova.
Yeah, just a small thing to kind of support what Damien said. The Kvitova did beat Kerber 6-2, 6-2 the last time they played on clay. I think it was indoors. It was Fed Cup, but it was on clay, and Kvitova won 2-2. That was in 2018.
Yeah, so there you go. It's not that bad a pick. So, Damien, you're onto something. And last but not the least is Petra Martic, is the first name on the very last section that has the likes of Mladenovic. Sloane Stephens is there, Alison Risk, and all the way to the second seed, Carolina Pliskova, not Kristina Pliskova. So, Mart, who is the last quarterfinalist coming out of these 16 ladies?
Yeah, this is the section that I feel the least confident about. I'm going to give you a name at the end because you asked for it, but I have zero confidence that it will be that name. Or let's put it this way: it's the name for whom I have 0.1 confidence over the others. But I'm going to go with Petra Martic here to the quarterfinals, just simply because first of all, I like Petra's game, overall game. She's got a game that can be effective on any surface, and she has a good all around game also. And I do like her draw. Okay, but another player coming from qualifying that I was very interested to see where she would end up in the draw, because I think she's got a ton of potential, is Maya Sheriff of Egypt. And she drew Pliskova first round. So I don't know, Sheriff Pliskova first round. I know if that happens, people are going to call it upset of the tournament. But I can actually see this upset happening. I really can. It depends on how big a deal Sheriff makes it in her mind to play a name like Pliskova in the first round of a major. There's a small chance of an upset there. But otherwise, even if Pliskova makes it to the third round, I'm going to go with Martic to the quarterfinals. There we go.
All right, so Damien, let's wrap this up for the quarterfinal. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Martic is the sensible pick. I mean, I've actually been a fan of her game for a while. It kind of feels like each slam I'm picking her to make the quarters, or even the semis, and it's not working out. But if I keep doing that, I'm hopeful that at one point it's gonna work. I really like her game on clay. She was great before, just after the restart, before the US Open. I like the all court tactics that she employs sometimes. I think it's her variety can really mess up with these power players that we see so often on the WTA tour. So she's also my pick for the fourth round. And I picked Kvitova there. She's also then. That's the quarters. Not yet. Yeah. Okay, sorry, I messed up the rounds. Okay, anyway, she's my pick to win the fourth round. I'm also very excited about Sheriff Pliskova, but in that section there's also Ostapenko and based on her week now, you know, just now in Strasbourg, I mean, it wasn't that bad. I mean, she finally got a win or two. I think she's always a player that can win a big match. So if we see Ostapenko play Pliskova in the second round, then I think that's always going to be an upset alert. Never mind the form that she's in, the lack of form that she's in.
No, I think that's definitely an upset alert on many courts and on the clay as well. So, Mert and Damien, we have like at the end of the show now, so hopefully mm-hmm. we can wrap this up quick. So, Mert, you're up first. Halep Bertens, who's the semifinalist here from this one?
I'm going with Halep over Bertens, and I'm going with Azarenka over Svitolina. Svitolina will stay consistent and not make it to the semis, but one more time, although I'm a fan of hers. And at the bottom, I'm going with Muguruza and Kerber as the semifinalists.
Muguruza and Kerber, okay. And Damien, are yours?
I've got this written up, so it might take me longer, but I had
I have yours.
Against
Rogers.
No, Rogers. I'll stick with Halep. Then we have Kontaveit Azarenka, right?
Uh-huh.
Azarenka.
Okay.
And then we have Muguruza. It's Muguruza, never mind who I picked in the next section.
Vekic,
yeah. Muguruza. And then we have Kvitova Martic, and I'm going to go with Martic again. As I said, I've been picking her for so many slams now, and I think sometime it's going to,
there's
going to come. Yeah, it's bound to happen.
All right, so who's winning this title, Mert? Is it Halep Azarenka versus Muguruza and Kerber? So these are two semifinalists.
I'm putting Halep and Muguruza in the finals, and I'm picking Muguruza to win the title in an upset.
Okay. That's not a surprise because they're the two best players coming in. But I was thinking Halep may win here. But yeah, Muguruza can go for a third slam, and that'll be a very interesting story as well. And she did lose the final in Australia. So do you see it differently, Damien?
Yeah, I'm going to look like a just copy of Mert now. But you know, I'm going to go with Halep over Azarenka and then Muguruza over Martic. And actually, it's not a, you know, I'm not just copying because I actually recorded a similar podcast earlier. It was much, much shorter. It was not that in-depth as this one that we did, but I also picked Muguruza there. So I'm going to stick
great, with it. Great minds think alike. You and Mert have a lot of comments at the game.
If anybody picked Halep, I wouldn't have much of an argument against it either.
Yeah, obviously. A good, actually, point for Halep is that she's already beaten Muguruza in Rome. So maybe that's sort of, you know, giving her the confidence if they meet again.
Sure. And believe me, even by our details, inputs, this is probably the longest podcast I have done in a long time. Maybe we have done a couple more that are close to 2 hours. So thank you both. So they are the winners. Djokovic and Nadal were the two winners, were the two panelists here, and then Garbiñe Muguruza as the women's choice. So if you enjoyed this, drop us a line and continue listening to Tennis with an Accent. And thank you both for spending so much time. Mert, I know this probably was a teaching day for you, and then you came back, and Damien, it's way past midnight. So get ready for
4 minutes past midnight. So
okay.
Sakib, I think the more important thing here is your family is going to kick you out the house if you keep it longer.
Yeah, I mean, I've been getting texts. So let's let's roll this. Let's get this show off the road and let's resume normal life as usual. And I'll edit this and send it out soon.